Alphabet disclosed it holds about $94.1 billion of stock in SpaceX after the rocket maker's IPO. Welcome to Debug the Hype. I'm Alex Morgan. This show curates stories from online communities and is not affiliated with Reddit or any subreddit. Today is July 27th, 2026. That 94.1 billion number will be our first stop because it explains a lot about why big corporate balance sheets look different than they did 5 years ago. CXMT's Shanghai debut ripped higher at the open, jumping roughly 470% and briefly valuing the company at about 3.3 trillion yuan, roughly $487 billion, thanks in part to only about 7% of its shares being available to trade. The pop matters because it's a reminder that IPO math in China can be driven more by float than fundamentals. Investors should watch aftermarket liquidity, not just the headline price, because a tiny free float can turn a normal order book into fireworks. Keep an eye on customers and long-term contracts. If production and margins can't scale, that opening day valuation becomes a short-term story. In southwestern Michigan, residents are suing over relentless noise from a hyperscale data center, where measurements reportedly sit in the 50 to 70 decibel range day and night, making windows unusable and, according to one neighbor, coinciding with worsening health symptoms in a household member. That case is notable because it flips the usual data center debate from power and water consumption to direct human impact, and the plaintiffs are now seeking class action relief for nuisance. Regulators and planners nationwide will be watching whether zoning or operating permits need updating. If you live near new infrastructure, this is a local government story with national implications about where we put quiet neighborhoods versus round-the-clock industrial loads.
After a 24-year absence, the CME Group is relaunching single-stock futures today, offering 55 full contracts and 22 micro-contracts that let traders take leveraged cash-settled exposure to individual equities without actually borrowing shares. That's concrete. More than 50 names are on the initial list, and the product is aimed at both hedgers and speculators, especially where share supply is tight. The risk here is leverage and complexity. These contracts amplify gains and losses, so whether you're hedging a position or thinking about a speculative play, make sure the margin mechanics and settlement rules are clear before you trade. Alphabet's 10Q revealed roughly 94.1 billion in publicly quoted shares of that newly public rocket company, but most of the number is heavily restricted. The filing says roughly $80 billion of those shares carry short-term sale restrictions, and another 14.1 billion remain under later lockups, which means the headline gain is largely an accounting mark, not an instant cash pile. That distinction matters because companies report other income from venture holdings, and investors often react emotionally to big round numbers, yet the real financial story is about timing, concentration risk, and what happens when lockups expire and large blocks of shares potentially hit the market. Analysts and commenters on investment forums have been debating the same trade-off. Early backers get a huge multiple, but they also face liquidity cliffs where selling en masse could pressure the stock. For a company with orbit-scale ambitions and a handful of speculative business lines, the market is trying to price both the realized and the unrealized together.
There are three practical consequences to watch. First, capital allocation optics inside Alphabet. A massive on-paper gain can mask underlying cash flow trends in the core business and can influence buybacks, acquisitions, or how executives justify riskier bets. Second, if insiders' lockups clear in waves, the stock could see episodic volatility. Exchanges price in supply and liquidity, and sudden increases in tradable float tend to compress multiples. Third, regulatory and governance questions follow. Large cross-holdings between major tech firms and strategic contractors raise antitrust and national security eyebrows, especially when the stake involves infrastructure that touches telecom, defense, or satellite internet. On the Wall Street threads, people split between nice score for shareholders and this is paper money until taxes and lockups hit. That split captures why we should treat the 94.1 billion figure as a headline that demands a follow-up ledger inspection. Related to valuation, HSBC's fresh coverage, which gave the rocket company a hold and a price target reflecting skepticism about long-dated moonshots like orbital data centers and heavy-lift vehicles, is a useful counterweight to the IPO exuberance because it forces the question, how much of that market value is for core cash flows like satellite broadband versus speculative hardware engineering? The bank argued the current share price already reflects a lot of the upside, and that's a sober reminder that public markets price risk differently than private rounds did. Private rounds often assumed a smoother execution path and a longer runway, while public investors demanded clear evidence of scale and margins. If you're tracking this stock as a trade or a signal for the space economy, pay attention to operational metrics. Starlink subscriber growth, per-user ARPU, and launch cadence, not just quarterly paper gains. Switching gears to privacy and legal precedent, federal prosecutors in Atlanta have charged Sam Tunick after his Graphene OS-equipped Pixel reportedly wiped itself during a Customs and Border Protection search at Hartsfield-Jackson Airport because he provided a duress passcode that triggers an automatic erase. This is the first time, as civil liberties watchers put it, that a U.S. prosecution has hinged on a built-in duress wipe feature, and prosecutors are invoking a seldom-used statute that criminalizes destroying property to prevent its seizure. The legal tension is concentrated and highly specific. On one hand, law enforcement says they were obstructed from accessing potential evidence. On the other, defense lawyers argue the stop was unlawful, Tunick was denied counsel, and that a passcode that erases encryption keys is a legitimate privacy tool, not illegal obstruction.
There are several layers to this that make it more than a courtroom drama. At the technical level, Graphene OS offers an optional duress pin, which deletes keys and renders encrypted data inaccessible. It does not factory reset in the visible way a consumer might expect, but it makes data effectively unrecoverable without those keys. At the legal level, the case tests whether a constitutionally protected act of refusing to provide a password or using a built-in privacy control can be recast as destruction of property. If the prosecution prevails, device manufacturers and privacy projects could face pressure to redesign features or document user behavior in ways that erode privacy protections. At the enforcement level, the setting matters. Border searches occupy a unique zone where courts have historically given broad authority to agents, but recent rulings and policy proposals have pushed back on sweeps without probable cause. Reddit threads and tech forums reacted with alarm. Commentators noted the irony that agents reportedly entered the passcode themselves, and many framed the prosecution as a potential chilling event for security tool development and use. For privacy advocates, the strategic question is how courts will balance a government's interest in evidence against an individual's technical means to protect data. Practically speaking, this case could influence three things: whether duress features remain common in secure phones, whether vendors change how they describe or ship optional security controls, and whether rights at the border receive more explicit statutory protection. If you care about device security, watch the suppression hearing and any appellate filings closely. Those legal moves will set procedural precedents long before any Supreme Court push.
Putting both deep stories together gives a pattern. Money and rights are colliding with technology in new ways. On one axis, you have enormous paper gains tied to a high-profile private company that just went public. And on the other, you have criminal law reaching into the design choices of privacy software. Both stories force the same question: who sets the rules when technology outpaces existing norms? Investors, engineers, regulators, or judges? Online communities are noisy about answers, but the real choices will be made in filings, lockup calendars, and court dockets. And those timelines, not the headline tweets, will decide outcomes. If companies' balance sheets can swing by tens of billions on paper, while courts decide whether built-in privacy tools are legal, the practical question becomes, who gets to write the playbook for capital in civil liberties next?
I'm Alex Morgan from Debug the Hype.